Alrighty, guys, welcome back to the Left of Straight Show Interviews, the premier podcast that shares the stories of our amazing LGBTQ community and, of course, fantastic straight allies, all from entertainment, foodies, books, music, and advocacy. I'm your host, as always, Scott Fullerton, and let's start talking. Well, hey, friends, welcome back. In studio with me today is the handsome and talented Adam Bradley. Adam's a charismatic lead vocalist of Sub Radio, known for their energetic sound and infectious melodies. Sub Radio's captured the hearts and fans across the nation and around the world. Founded by these six childhood friends, they are now globally recognized, and their dedication to their fans and music is unparalleled. The band held a pandemic-induced virtual Reddit tour back in 2020. They reached over 7 million viewers in just 6 months. Adam's not just a singer, but a fantastic storyteller, where he brings a unique blend of enthusiasm and insight to every song he performs. And the band has been very appreciative of its queer fan base and have infused a lot of that into the music as well. Currently, they're embarking on a journey with their newest releases, and I can't wait to talk to them about all this and more. But first, take a look.
Don't look down, higher than Nirvana, we can dance it out to Janet. You'll make it feel like 1990 something. You'll make it feel like 1990 something.
We are the indie band trying to get our dream producer to work with us. If you don't know him, he's responsible for Sugar We're Going Down, Ocean Avenue, etc., etc. You guys got our first video viral enough that his team saw it, and we got a live audition in Los Angeles with Neil Avron. I want to show you a clip of us rehearsing the song for real, and I need you to give us your best Simon Cowell in the comments. Tell us how we could do better.
Mr. Adam Bradley, welcome to studio. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am excited to have you on. I told you before we started, I knew who you guys were, but I didn't know who you guys were because I'm horrible at music. But wow, I'm so excited to talk to you, and the band and yourself are just doing some amazing things, my friend. So thanks for taking the time to come on. You've been a busy boy.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we certainly have.
For sure. We're going to talk about all of that. Talk a little bit. I mean, I remember Stacy's dad. I think that's when I first heard about you. And it's kind of went from there and then been in and out of my consciousness since then. But you guys have really made fun of taking all these songs and putting these different, sometimes queer bands for them, kind of making their own and doing your own music. What kind of singers were you listening to when you were growing up?
Ooh, yeah, it's funny that you mention Stacy's dad. That is how a lot of folks come to Sub Radio initially. I had not listened to Fountains of Wayne, who were responsible for Stacy's mom, until like 6 months before we made that video. And I kind of got obsessed, and that has... that's been a lot of my musical taste for the last few years, is like 90s pop rock. But we grew up listening to, we had pretty diverse musical taste as a band, as a group. But I will say for me, it was a lot of, sort of the limper wristed side of pop punk. So sort of the Panic at the Discos, and right, sort of melodic pop punk of the mid 2000s. That was the music that I was listening to when I started to think about maybe I could do this too.
I love that. And what kind of a kid were you growing up? Where'd you grow up at?
We all grew up and went to the same school system in Northern Virginia, in the, nice, the DC suburbs, which was a lovely place to grow up. No complaints at all. It was boring, but it was nice.
I love those local bands like that, though. I mean, where I was from, actually, our big high school band that would play all the high schools was called US 101. And Tommy from Motley Crue was from our hometown. He was a drummer back in that band. So Tommy Lee was a good friend. And I loved just going. We followed him to all the different high schools. And so early band life was a lot of fun for me. I don't know how you guys remembered it, but I enjoyed it a lot.
We felt like we have less of an organic music scene in our town than it sounds like you may have. I mean, the when people talk about music in our area, they're talking about stuff from the 80s, like, Dave Grohl is from here, or, you know, Bad Brains and Fugazi. All that is true, you know, soul and go-go music in D.C., but and all that is true, and it also is not around anymore. And the music scene now is quite different, and it was hard for us to find, like, shows that made sense for us to play on, you know, acts that it made sense to open for. Hard to find an audience for the sort of, like, synthy indie pop sound that we were doing in kind of a very professional city. So growing up, it was a lot of playing the same venue over and over, which was Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia. Shouts out to Jam and Java, the greatest local venue of all time, who booked this high school band over and over, despite the fact that we only sold tickets to our families.
I love that. Well, and of course, I date myself with Tommy Lee. I'm a bear of a certain age in the gay community. So unfortunately, I know what you're talking about in the different music genres throughout the years. Talk about, like I said, your music is very accessible and sometimes directly driven towards the queer community. Talk about your own journey towards that. When did you kind of first start discovering yourself? And do you ever feel you kind of found it, your own tribe in your queerness?
Sure. I talk about this at our shows, and I've talked about it on these live streams. When we play, we have a song called Cool from a couple of years ago. And it sort of is the mission statement for me of, like, why I've tried to incorporate my own queerness into the group and into the band and into the music. And the song is sort of inspired by I've kept up with some people from my childhood, from, you know, elementary, middle, high school, who, as it turns out, a lot of the people I was making friends with in high school, and I was not out at the time, have come out since. It turns out you still find each other even when you don't have an obvious marker. And so I have gotten to, like, watch a lot of these people grow up and come out in their own ways when they were able to, or when they felt comfortable doing it. Sure. And, like, just become much different people and much happier people, obviously. Than right. The people that I knew when they were younger. And that's, like, really cool and inspiring to me. And that's, like, I came out long after high school. It came out when I was, like, 27. And I have felt the same way, that, like, I have been able to incorporate entire new parts of myself into my life in a way that I was not able to before. And so that felt really important to me, that, like, people could see that you, even if you have not figured this out when you're 16, that there is, like, a future in which it is possible, and people discover that all the time, and you can too. And so that's sort of been the main focus of it for me, is less on the like almost less on the identity portion of it specifically, and more just on the, like, there is a community out there for you, and you will find it. And even if you have not found it at this moment, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so we've tried to create that at shows, and I think that has been really, really lovely. We've met a lot of people that has resonated with.
Yeah, I think that message of inclusiveness just resonates from inside, right? I think people kind of know it when they see it. Your music is just a facilitator towards that. I think you guys all are so open and so so comfortable with each other, and you're able to kind of live your life and let everyone else just kind of enjoy the ride along with you, which is amazing.
I think another aspect of it that people appreciate, sorry to cut you off, but that is that the rest of the band is straight allies. And we're not like, we don't shy away from that. We don't try to pretend that we're a gay band or something. but like, I think that people really appreciate seeing that like support and community from people who like don't have to, and like didn't necessarily, none of them signed up to join this, but they, when I joined the band, I was straight to them. So like that we, that's not what they thought they were doing when they got this front man. Right. And have been very gracious about like incorporating that into our show and into our brand. And so like, I think people appreciate that too. I do.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think that, and it's just great that everyone kind of rally around. You see, they're just as much into the performance as you are in the different, and the videos and the fun mm-hmm. things. I mean, everyone's all the way in, which you just love.
Yeah.
You need to have that kind of allyship and everyone kind of working together towards a goal. When did you start first finding your voice? I mean, very unique. You have a great, I mean, you have such a great range. And when did you first start thinking that you could sing, and where did that come about?
I was a guitar guy in high school. And so I spent a lot of time, a lot of us met taking guitar classes in high school. That was the instrument that I sort of chose arbitrarily. And so I spent a ton of time at home just learning acoustic covers of songs that I liked. I thought that I was an okay singer, but I had no frame of reference. And so I played at a talent show at our high school. I played the Rufus Wainwright version of Hallelujah, like the one that's on the Shrek soundtrack, on the guitar, and I sang it. And Matt, who is now the guitarist for Sub Radio, was at the show, and he was like, "Do you want to be in a band?"
That's hilarious.
So that is actually how the band was initially formed, or at least how I joined it, was the first time that I sang in public. Matt happened to be there.
That's amazing. I love that story. Well, talk about how is your guys' approach to songwriting? You have all these great, diverse songs. I mean, your fans are just loving them. They have such great tunes to them. Are you guys collaborative? Does one person write most of them, the other person kind of lends their two cents worth? Or how do you guys write?
It's a complicated question, actually. So it's evolved over time. The very earliest stuff that we put out as Sub Radio, a lot of it was written by just sort of noodling around together in a basement or in a dorm until something happened. And that turned out to not be a super sustainable process for writing songs, because you end up with stuff that sort of goes all over the place. And so for the last several years, it's been some combination of me, Matt, and occasionally Mike will just be working on stuff on their own. We all have sort of home recording setups. We'll send some tracks around, we'll start adding our own stuff as we go. And then once we sort of feel like we've got verse, chorus, we like the way that it's feeling, then we take it into the room, and sort of nail down what parts people are playing and that kind of thing. Lately we're working on a full length album that we hope will start coming out this year. We're like getting set to record it here in a few weeks. Which is super exciting.
We're going to get into that, because just yes. The process going through it of who you're working with and how things are coming about. I want to go through that a little more in a second, because
absolutely.
I am a huge fan now on social media. Now talk about the challenges though you face while starting to make a name for yourself. I mean, you guys are an overnight wonder 12 years in, right? In 2020. Talk about moving on up that chain and what it was like kind of slogging on in the beginning.
Man, it still feels like we're slogging, but I appreciate it. It is pretty funny, because we certainly should have, like a band of our size and having worked for as long as we were, and also the fact that we all were working 9-to-5 full-time jobs in 2020, like that COVID very much should have probably broken up Sub Radio.
Right.
And really the only thing that kept it together was those live streams that we started doing. You mentioned it at the beginning, but the Reddit and TikTok later stuff, that really changed the whole nature of this for us. And it also introduced us to this like community of really like engaged and dedicated, like super fans of Sub Radio. And that has been like very critical to us, we think. And so we've tried to do as much as possible for those people. Like we've got a Patreon where we post exclusive stuff, and we have a little Discord channel where people like we're more personally active. We have a texting line that people can communicate with us on. So that's been like, it has been hard to manage, to answer your question, because there's a lot more of those people now than right. there used to be. And so we're having to navigate, like, how do we give these people the experience that they deserve from us, which is, we've always wanted to be very personal and like direct, but also do that for like now maybe thousands of people instead of just like a few dozen. So it's become more complicated.
I can understand that, but yeah, I think it's you make that turn of the corner though, now it becomes a full-time gig. So there's not only pressure to getting the fan base together and getting everything together, but you guys got to now make a living for yourselves, right? And kind of put this all together. So that extra pressure, like you said, the pressure before, if it didn't break up the band because of COVID, now you need to have that extra pressure of now we really need to make it because we're all in this 100%. But I think you guys have really just come out of it kind of shining. It seems like you guys are still tight, if not tighter than ever, since you went full time at it. How does that feel for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is like, it has changed our relationship to each other a lot, in some good ways and some bad ways. I mean, like we certainly have to, like we have to have more professional relationships with each other now. And the times that we see each other are times that we're working. And there's not a lot of time left over in that for us to like, now let's go out and hang out. and so we have had to like professionalize our relationships with each other a little bit, which is kind of sad in some ways, but also it means that like we're actually doing what we set out to do in the first place.
Right.
And so I think what you're seeing is correct though. Like we are all still loving doing this, and like loving getting together, and writing these songs and making this stuff for the internet, because this is exactly why we set out to do it in the first place, is so that we could have this like this audience.
Right.
So it's exciting. I think we are excited.
Have you guys created, how do you handle that work-related stress, pressure, being on the road? You're with each other on the road now through long tours, and you're making music together and everything. How do you handle the stress that kind of comes up with that? Have you guys found your own coping mechanisms that kind of, if someone kind of goes off a little bit, it's like, well, I understand they just need a little time? Or how do you guys kind of keep that harmony after the stressors kind of kick in?
I'm a big CBD guy. I think a lot of it is we've got a history that goes back to us being like 14.
Right.
And so a lot of things, are just a little smoother because I think we feel like our relationships with each other are like sort of permanent. Like those aren't going anywhere. So there's not like, no problem ever seems big enough that like we're gonna break up or anything. Like the band's still gonna be there tomorrow. So that knowing that all that history is there is very helpful. But we're just like we have our roles, I think, is what's important. People know what is their responsibility and what is somebody else's, and people know like what is gonna get taken care of for them and what they need to focus on. What their strengths are. And I think that has been very helpful because we are a big group and we try to sort of feature everyone and use everyone's like talent and input like semi-equally where we can, because everybody has a lot to contribute and a lot of like very different talents right. in the group. And so I think that has been important for us to like find niches for everyone and not just have it. Because what we've never been and what we don't want to be is like Adam and his band. And so keeping the sort of like keeping everyone busy has been important.
No, that makes sense. And I think that's smart. How do you guys stay updated? I mean, like I said, you've been around for a long time now, maybe 13 to 17 years, something like that. How do you guys handle all of the trends and the changes of the music industry? I mean, you guys were back when live was really important, and then maybe CDs, and then all of a sudden Now we have streaming where you're getting 3 cents for every 1,000 streams. And so you're out touring again. How do you guys see the music changes? Are you guys easily able to adapt to that? Anything you find positive in it? Anything you kind of find negative in it?
Oh man, that's a great question. I mean, we really did get lucky in riding the live streaming wave of COVID. That is something that I feel like we got in early on, kind of by chance and not by choice. But otherwise, I mean, I don't know. I find like it's hard to even talk about the business aspect of it because it does seem like there are fewer and fewer ways every year for anyone who doesn't have just like an enormous amount of capital already to make money on this. And that feels less solvable in a way that's almost like, I'm just going to file that away and not think about it. just see if we can figure it out. But the aspect of it that is like, yeah, how do people find you is also very hard. And that has changed a lot. Like, I don't remember. I think I found music in high school by like scrolling through the iTunes library or something. Right. And then like, I would go to Target and look at what CDs were on sale. And that's like a very different experience from a lot of it now is just all about whatever the computer thinks people will like. And so we're having a lot of trouble with that, both musically and like in, as far as like social media marketing, all of that. Like you end up making stuff for a computer and like not for other people. And that feels bad in a way that like I don't think is sustainable.
Very well said. I mean, like I said, I'm a certain age, so not only Blockbuster went away, but Tower Records was my refuge where I would go to Tower Record on the weekends and have places like that to go to. And even the post Tower, the Sam Goodies and the things like that have gone the way of the dodo bird. So you don't really have music stores anymore because it's all streaming. You can't touch them. You can't see them. You can't see that it's a whole different animal. So yeah, I agree 100%.
My dad was a record store guy as well. And he's transitioned pretty seamlessly to just having like a 22,000 song iTunes library. that's his own unique solution.
Good for him. I tell the story a lot. I used to work for Capitol Records when I was pretty much out of high school, a couple years out of high school. And one of the cool things Capitol Records did is they would have a big album sale down in the basement of the tower in Hollywood twice a year where you can go down and get any Capitol Record, Apple, EMI album for a buck. And so I would go down, I got my entire Beatles collection from Apple EMI. And so that was a lot of fun seeing all those things. And Kaja Gugu was on there, all these old bands. At the time, David Bowie was on there and Tina Turner. So yeah I miss the album days. So that was fun. But you are killing it on social media. I mean, social media is a huge way. You guys are absolutely killing social media. Do you guys come up with these ideas together? I think just some of your video. Just today, I watched your water video. Just to find them in the end, we plugged a tour. I mean, you have a lot of fun with it. How do you guys come up with those ideas?
We've really like professionalized this in a lot of ways. It used to be that we had a couple days a week. We'd meet up in Matt's basement and we'd show up and be like, all right, what are we doing? and now we have calls scheduled. We have meeting times every week. and so we will typically get on the phone with each other on Friday and talk about, all right, what are we trying to put on the internet next week? When are we going to film it? What is it going to look like? Who's going to script it out? We give ourselves the weekend to figure all that out. And then we meet up and we do it. So it's very collaborative, the social media stuff. I will say a lot of it is spearheaded by Matt as sort of our social media chair. And what he will do is sit down and he refers to this as doing research. but sit down and just let the TikTok algorithm show him stuff for like an hour and a half and in a separate tab be taking notes on like, that's a video we could do. So a lot of our stuff is basically like stolen from other people. I mean, that's everything on the internet, but
exactly.
We'll see an idea, we'll give it a sub radio twist and then we'll do it.
Well, you guys are killing it. I'm like, don't turn it into a job. That's almost too much scheduling. Don't make it a job, but you definitely have to make it work how it works for you guys for sure.
And you got to fit it in around doing the band stuff, like making the songs.
Yeah, every once in a while you should make some music. I think that's a good idea. I like that part of the plan. Well, speaking of music, let's talk about it. You just got off tour. You did the Past Selves tour part two. I mean, you kind of broke it down a bit. I was so mad. Like I said, I wasn't in tune enough. You guys were in Pittsburgh, which is an hour from me. I would have loved to go see you guys in person. But talk about the second leg of this tour. Were you guys having fun with that?
Second half of the tour was incredible. Just some of the wildest shows that we've ever played. It is very, very surreal to show up to a place like Boston where we hadn't been for like 2 years and see 450 some people show up. And just to do that like over and over and over in cities that we have not been to, really wild. And really like not even just like the numbers of people, but like people are showing up with like, you know, custom shirts that they made with our lyrics on them. And you know, signs and gifts for us and like letters.
Amazing.
And that like really speaks to us, like feels like we're doing something.
I bet.
And so yeah, it was incredible.
I mean, you have this was Moon Tower opening for you, so you have an opening act and everything. I mean, that's just exciting stuff. So I can imagine that, and the fans seem to just be lapping everything up. They're very engaged. I think it's part of your social media. I think it's part of the excellent music, and I just think it's part of the fandom that you guys have created there. So that's good on you guys for just being able to keep that interaction. Like you said, it gets harder every day, but it must be kind of really rewarding to see that in action.
Really is. And we're sort of still set on trying to come out and like talk and interact with as many people as possible at these shows. That's the one thing that's really especially getting difficult. And it's part of the reason we've started doing VIP experiences on these tours to try to like to lower that load a little bit. We are still committed to try to do that. We don't sell our own merch anymore, but we'll come out after the show and we'll talk to people.
Nice. I like that. Well, and I want to start getting into this newer album. And speaking of these fan events, you guys held a super secret concert not too long ago for your fans. And I think even you guys were blown away by the passion of everybody, right?
Yeah, that was insane. We posted a little recap of this that I think is pretty good. I just could not believe we sort of assumed we invited a certain number of people to this and the tickets were free. And because of that, we figured a lot of these people will probably not actually show up because people don't show up to something. They don't have any, like they didn't spend money on the ticket. They just be like, it's not worth it. we had like 100% attendance. And people were so into it and they had learned the lyrics that we sent them a few days earlier. And it was just like, it was a really lovely evening with just like, it felt like we got like the 200 like core fans in the room. Apologies right. To anyone who couldn't make it. Like, we love you too, but it felt very good.
Absolutely spectacular. They were just bopping along. Like I said, I saw that video. So much fun to it.
Yeah.
So now you have these new songs. You guys have a goal in mind for the new album. Let my listeners who might not know who Neil Avron is and where this is coming from.
Yeah, Neil is the guy who produced like every big alt rock pop punk thing you can think of in the 2000s. So he's responsible for like all of Fall Out Boy's career, basically, as a producer. Most of Yellow Card's output. He's worked with Say Anything and Linkin Park and Walk the Moon and just like an outstanding producer. Kind of our like dream guy for this album because that is exactly the kind of stuff that we feel like we're making. Maybe not like a household name, although we've had some people comment on these videos that they did know who he was. But not exactly like Max Martin, but really like defined an entire sound, and we feel like we want to continue with that. So we have been trying to get his attention. And
you only needed what? I think your management told you only need like 10,000 shares or something. No big deal, right?
Yeah,
or 100,000 shares. So maybe a million views. So no big goals, right? But then what happened? Talk about this fan base.
We really didn't have to do anything other than ask for it. And then it happened. which is really kind of remarkable. And we didn't actually know if that would mean anything. Like I maybe just assumed that those were numbers they were throwing out. And, but no, it turns out that Neil and his folks were like already familiar with us when we reached out, because of this. And so here we are, we're preparing to go out there, soon, like in a few days. Wow. And see if we can make this thing work. So, and we just think that the songs and the album that we're sitting on are just so, so good. They're the best stuff that we've done. And it feels like it's been a while. We spent a long time putting out like one song at a time or three songs at a time. And we have not gotten a chance to like do a real project like this. And I'm like personally very satisfied with it. I'm so excited for people to hear this.
Well, you put out a couple of songs for fans to vote on and everything. The songs are absolutely amazing. I picked Don't Cry. They're all really good, but Don't Cry was my favorite. It's just kind of an amazing process to go through. How did you produce this? Did you produce everything yourself before, or have you had different producers you've worked at different levels? And what kind of made this feel like it's time to go to the next step?
We have a great in-house producer whose name is Kyle Cochran. He's our guitar player. and so a lot of our, like the demos that you hear in that video, I think this is true. The demos that you hear in that video are mostly him, just sort of home production. We a lot of that stuff is either samples or like we loop stuff or, but most of the stuff that we've ever released as Sub Radio has been self-produced, and it's a lot of it has been produced by Kyle. But we have started working with external producers for the last couple of years. And so, like, for instance, 1990-something, the single from our last release, that was with a producer. His name's Jason Evigan. He's also sort of a big pop guy in L.A., and I felt like he really nailed that song in a way that like we couldn't quite get. And so that's really what we are looking for here is like somebody, and we've already seen this work in the past, but like somebody who is not afraid to tell us like, you gotta run that verse again. Like there's something not right there. You gotta change that line, or like, you know, this bridge needs to be bigger, or like, have you guys thought about dropping this in octave? Like, people who are willing to question us and work with us in that way, because we are so, I, you know, we're good at getting these songs to a certain point, but somebody's got to elevate it who is external to the process of actually making the song in the first place. I think it's like well kind said. Of a crucial step. And so it would kind of be a dream for that, this to be the guy to do that.
Well said, though. I like that. And last question, talk about yourself a little bit. How have you felt your voice has elevated over these 12, 17 years now? Where do you see your voice going here? Where do you see the band's level of performance? I mean, the music seems like it's getting better and better. Talk about how your journey's been for you.
Ooh, that's a good question. I think we are all in the process of figuring that out right now, because a lot of what we want to do is not like fully relaunch the band, but sort of give ourselves a new look and like visual language and like attitude, that is sort of a break from, we've been very, very available all the time, on the internet and like doing these live streams and posting from the basement, like all this sort of like very DIY stuff. And I think we want to try to elevate that somehow, in a way that feels more polished. So we're kind of working out what that's going to mean for us, because none of us are exactly fashionistas, and none of us have a great visual eye either. And so we're looking for help on that. But I'm excited to see that, because I do really want to do something with this band that is like, feels big, feels like a big swing. And I love that like this DIY approach that we've had for so long has brought so many people into the, like the fan base, and has made people feel very close and connected to us. I think that's like very, very important. And now I kind of want to like say something. And so we're going to figure out what that means and if we can do it. But I do think we have a great set of songs, if nothing else.
The music, just the little clips I heard, are amazing. Just the response from the audience, I could tell they were totally loving it. And the best thing that I hear about all of it is you're doing it together as a band, right? It's not the Adam Band. You're not trying to go off separate. No one's trying to do the. You guys are working together, and it's really a collaborative effort. I think that's the most important thing. And that's what's going to bring you the most success, is you guys are still having each other's backs and making this happen for all of you together. So congratulations on that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
No problem at all. Let's finish up with talk about, you're going to have a new tour pretty soon, so we'll talk about that in a second. But I do love that you guys give back. You've given back so many different times before. You're doing a gig on May 18th for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. I mean, how important is that? How do you kind of find yourselves with these associations? And how important is it to you and the band to give back like that? Because it's not your first time. You've done it before, and it's an amazing work.
Yeah, it was very special that they reached out to us. They approached us and they said, hey, we saw that you guys played at the Howard. It looked like a great show. Would you like to come back and do it again and help us raise money for this wonderful cause? And we said, that sounds like a great deal. Yeah. So that was just the perfect fit. Yeah, we're very much looking forward to that. After that, we get to spend the summer getting ready for this tour, which we are super stoked about. I'm excited that we actually branded it in a real way. It's the Sunrise City Tour. We're going to give you some more visuals later so you can figure out what to wear. Mid-September to mid-October, we're out in the West Coast. We're in Texas. We're in the Carolinas. It's going to be the best tour we've ever played, because everyone is.
I'm missing you guys by a month. I'm so upset. I'm doing a big gay road trip from Ohio, where I'm at here, to a month of shows in Palm Springs, bringing live guests to Palm Springs for a month. But it ends August 9th, so I'm missing you guys by about a month and a half, 2 months. I'm all
shoot.
Bummed. But DC is only about 6.5 hours, so I'll have to come see you guys somewhere there as you're getting. Yeah. If you're doing any warm-ups, you got to give me a holler so I can come
where,
up. And
I'm sorry, where are you at?
I'm in Northeast Ohio, right by the Pennsylvania border. So not too far, too far from you guys. But yeah, I'm so excited for you, Adam. Thanks so much for taking the time to share your journey, the band's journey. Thanks so much for the queer representation and all the allyship from the band members. This has been a fantastic interview. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, this is great.
Let everyone know real quick where they can find the band on social media and where they can find tour dates, website or anything like that.
Yes, you can find us at Sub Radio Band pretty much everywhere, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, yada, yada, yada. We are on tour starting September 16th, West Coast in Texas and the Carolinas. And those tickets are on our website, which is sub-radio.com.
Fantastic. Adam, stay on the line for me, guys. We're going to have a fun 5 question with Adam next week. Be sure to look for that. We appreciate you tuning in every Wednesday and Thursday to Left to Straight Show interviews. We'll see you next time. Have a great rest of your week. Bye-bye.
You're going to have to rebook our flights and our hotels.
We're the indie band who's been trying to get the attention of our dream producer, Neil Avron. These are all his insane credits. You can see them on the screen. If you've been following this series, you know that you guys have shared and viewed these videos so much. His team saw them and asked us to fly out to LA to audition. You all helped pick our audition song. And so overnight, we booked flights and hotels, and here we are in Los Angeles. So we went to Neil's place. We can't show you the audition because we couldn't film it. But what we can show you is the phone call that we had with our label right afterward.
Alright, do you want the good news or the bad news?
The bad news?
Alright, the bad news is you're gonna have to rebook our flights and our hotels. Because the good news is we're doing the songs with Neil, baby! We're doing it!
So yeah, here we are. We're gonna go make this incredible album with Neil, thanks to you guys. Thank you so much for everything you have done for us. Keep following along. We're gonna be posting live updates from the studio, which is where we're going right now. See you there.
Thanks for listening to The Left of Straight Show. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast distributor, and please give us a 5-star rating so more listeners can find us. You can follow us on social media, and be sure to check out our website for contests and other news and information. See you next week.